Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Louise.
Hi, Louise.
Hi, and it's really an honor to be here. And in celebration of Courtney J, I'm wearing a rainbow band of hair ties on my wrist. Three years ago, I was up here. And if any of you have hair like mine, you know at night you need to tie it back to sleep. And I didn't have a hair tie. I came with everything but a hair tie. And I was in the bathroom up there. And Courtney came in and she had this rainbow of hair ties on her wrist. And I said, I came up without a hair tie. And I didn't even have to ask her. She whipped off a hair tie and gave it to me. And I was able to use that all weekend. And that loving gesture meant so much. Really meant so much. It's what I know that I have learned to celebrate in recovery as female relationships. That's what I've learned to celebrate. It's not what I had learned prior to coming here, unfortunately. And I celebrate you and I look at you. I mean, it's amazing what this program does. And as we were reading the readings and doing, thank you for that. Oh, man. As we were reading the readings, and this chorus of female voices spoke, I thought how beautiful to hear all these feminine voices. Because when I got clean, there were many, many meetings where I was the only female face. There was many, many meetings when I was the only white face. But there were more meetings when I was the only female face. And when I moved to Pittsburgh, Maggie was one of the female faces as my predecessor. And she taught me, sometimes we have to blaze our own trail. She taught me that, to blaze my own trail, and I'll never forget that. But one of the things that I did, I developed these coping mechanisms, right? That might not make sense to anybody else, Kathy, but they helped me cope. And one of the things that I did in every meeting that I was in for probably 28 years was I would count the ratio of men and women in the meetings. And I shared about this at my home group in my anniversary, probably at 28 years. And Or I shared about it prior to my anniversary. And my anniversary meeting, two of my home group members, one male and one female, both came up to me after the meeting and said to me what the ratio of men and women were in the meeting. And the fact that they cared enough to care that that was important to me, that that was something I did to cope, I never have to count anymore. Like, the fact that they cared healed that part of me that was hurt by the struggle of being the only woman in a meeting and in a fellowship that was our predecessors, where the language, you know, even our steps, our language is male-oriented. You know, when I invited Goddess in to my concept of a higher power, things changed for me. And it talks about this in our literature, I learned how to not limit my concept of this power that can transform me, transform my life, heal me, allow me to be an instrument allow you to be an instrument in my life. I grew up in a whole family full of women. There was my dad, there was my brother, my oldest brother. The oldest is a boy. And then my mom and six of us. And I don't like the word girls. I don't know what it is. Unless you're like under 12, I don't like the word girls. If you're 12 and up, I think you're a young woman. If you're over like something, you're a woman. And I listen to even women sometimes, but I listen to a lot of men refer to us. Like, I don't know about you. I'm going to be 54 next month. I'm not a girl. I get offended. And again, maybe that's just me, but I'm not a girl. So like Deborah, when I speak, I have two coins I hold, and I recently added something. So I have my coin that has three X's on it, and I have my late husband's infinity medallion, and I carry these with me when I speak. And now I also carry this beautiful key. It's a moon ring heart key. That's the key to my oldest daughter's home. She bought all by herself at the age of 27. She lives in McCandless. I'm so proud. And she bought me this key. It's very symbolic to me. And now it's like purple. It's usually blue. I don't know what that means. I'll have to go look it up. Probably I'm nervous. This is so hard for me. There's so many women here that I love and adore, cherish, honor. Don't know where I'd be without. And typically I don't like to do this anymore. I'd much rather sit one-on-one with you and talk really about what's going on. And it's not that I can't sit here and talk to you guys about what's going on, but as a group. But I like the two-way. I like the two-way, and this is more one-way. But it's my turn. I went for a walk beforehand, and I'm in this place. So my husband passed away a little over 2 years ago from cancer, and I could get into my whole story, but just the fact that I'm standing here alive, we share similar stories. You know, we share similar stories. And if your story is anything like mine, you know the challenge it is to get to where we are today. And it's one thing to stand here clean. It's another thing to stand here and say, in all complete honesty, and we do, right? We do. That we've opened our hearts, that we've risked everything to love as fully as we can, and to allow ourselves to be loved. And so what began as a fairy tale ended as a really horrible nightmare, in that we're all going to die. We went into our marriage choosing to be life partners. Sometimes this works out, sometimes this doesn't, but every day we made a decision to be life partners. Every day. Until cancer shortened his life. And you know, so we're all going to die. I married him thinking that one of us is going to bury the other one. Very real possibility if you're in a long, lifelong relationship. Unfortunately, and you know, again, I won't get into all of the details because I can get lost there just like I can get lost back in my active addiction. I start talking about that and I get lost. And that's not where I want to put my focus today. Not that I don't process it and deal with it and talk about it, but for right now and during this meeting and for where I am today, I want to focus on today, the gifts, the opportunities today. But it was like the perfect storm between the cancer, the treatment, the fact that he was a recovering addict too. You know, and processing the feelings. I had a lot of feelings sitting up there listening to the speaker that was standing here last night. My husband had kidney cancer. He talked about getting a kidney transplant. He talked about leaving the hospital adamant that he wasn't going to take any medication and fuck you if you have a sore little finger. You know, my husband had cancer and he chose, and it wasn't a choice. He needed pain medication. And I'm still, honest to God, I'm still processing a huge resentment against the fellowship for some of the shit we say. I mean, and it made me really start questioning, what do I say to people? How do I approach people? Am I willing to sit with someone and listen to their reality without having to fucking interject my fucking perspective on their reality, their life, their pain, their fucking struggle? Can I do that? You know? We were going through our struggle and I had well-meaning, well-intentioned people were coming up to me swearing John would be okay. Because guess what? They fucking prayed. I had a guy at work, had a fucking spiritual experience at this church he hadn't been to since his childhood, and he stood on this doorstep and he got struck by fucking lightning, God telling him John was going to be okay, my John was going to be okay. And I was the one carrying this 300-pound man that at the end was 100 pounds to doctors, to radiology, to oncology, to hospitals, to emergency rooms, to fucking bed. It's important for us to me. And this is one of the things I love about one of my very special woman in my life who models compassion for me from the very first time I met her. She's modeled compassion for me, and it's something that inspires me beyond measure. So it's hard for me to stand up here because I'm still so raw. I've done so much, and I do some interesting things to heal, blazing my own trail. The women that were in my life as predecessors and sponsors encouraged me to get creative. They encouraged me to get off the beaten path sometimes and figure out what works for me because, you know, again, I came from rooms that were filled with literally old men drunk, smoking cigarettes who told me they spilled more than I drank, literally. That cliche was my reality. And I heard another young person once say, to one of them, but you don't understand. When I spill mine, I get down on my knees and lick it up. You know? So I went walking, and I always find heart rocks. So I found a heart rock, and I went and I laid down in the middle of the woods way, way out there, and I just laid there with this heart on my chest and felt the weight of it, and you know, I just try sometimes to touch the moment. Just touch the moment and let the moment touch me and not try to have any expectations about anything. Just my life is full. Mary H. used to tell me, you don't have a full plate. You have a platter, you know, and it's true. And I have a platter, and it's overwhelmingly overflowing with goodness and abundance. But sometimes I, more and more and more, especially since John died, I just am in this. I heard this guy at Rain or Shine speak once. He came for about 3 months and never saw him again. And I share this story a lot. He said that, because it touched me and it affects me and it's where I am. He said that they had found this Aborigine culture in the middle of the Amazon or something that had not been affected by other societies. They were living isolated from the rest of the world, just doing their thing. And they were trying to observe them without them knowing they were being observed. They wanted to study them. And they noticed that as these villagers were going about their day and their activities, very randomly, members would just stop. Individuals would just stop, frozen like they were statues, just stop. And then and for no specific time, they could see no reason why. And then equally unexplainably, for some reason, they would all of a sudden just start going about their days and nothing had happened. And I mean, so they're observing this village and this person's over here and stops for 5 minutes and this person's over here and they're stopped for 3 days and they couldn't make sense of it. And they were able to communicate with a neighboring civilization and ask them, like, what is this phenomenon going on? And they told them. And so this guy's sharing this in a meeting. And unfortunately, because this is what I also remember, like, I'm one of those addicts that survived by observing, right? And what I observed in the meeting as he was sharing this is people were thinking, like, this guy's a fucking whack job. But what he said sticks with me to this day, and this had to have been over 20 years ago. He said what this neighboring village communicated to them the best they could was that they believed that sometimes life happens too fast, and sometimes we just need to stop and let our spirits catch up. So I'm in this, I'm trying to let my spirits catch up mode. And it'll go on for as long as it'll go on. If there's one thing I've learned in my recovery process, it's that it's a rare occasion where it serves me to try to force something. Not saying there are occasions where it does serve me to force something, but that's not the norm. So I went walking and I found this leaf and it reminded me of me, and it's so beautiful. I think it's so beautiful. It reminded me of, one of my favorite activities is walking along the beach and finding shells. And I always used to want to find the perfect shell, right? And I remember once going to the Ocean City Convention. It was the year I divorced my children's father. And my children were in so much pain. And it was the right thing to do for me. And I wholeheartedly believed in my heart to this day it was the right thing to do for them too, because I didn't want them as young women growing up believing this is what a marriage is. This is how men and women relate to each other. I didn't want them seeing what we were modeling for them and growing up thinking that was, I wanted more for them. I wanted more for me. Wanting more for them helped me want more for me. That's how I came in. I came in the back door with this wanting more for me. My desire first was wanting more for my daughters. And I went walking along the beach there, my first Ocean City Convention, and I found this gorgeous, I still have it, this gorgeous shell. And it was broken. It was not whole and perfect. It was broken. But it was so beautiful, and it was brokenness. It was even more beautiful than a perfect one. because you could see inside and you can see the intricacies on the inside. That's what we can do for each other. When we allow ourselves to risk opening our hearts and opening what's going on in our lives with each other. And here I am feeling so broken and, oh, and when I share it with Deborah and she's like, she gives me that different perspective, you know? So I like this stuff and I love this leaf. I believe it's maple. And it's, I must have just recently fell because even since an hour and a half ago, it's shriveled a lot more. So it's still alive, but kind of dying. Going through that transformation and, you know, I'm going to find a place to put it so that it can decompose and come back as something else. And that's the process I'm in. I feel it. I believe it. It's happened to me numerous times in recovery. This transformation that can occur for us, you know, and through sponsorship, through step work, through developing a relationship with however we want to define this power that doesn't have to be limited to the he that we talk about, the God that we talk about in our literature. You know, those are just placeholders for words that our literature tells us we're free to develop our own understanding. Through meditation, we're free to develop our own language. And it starts there. And for me, the kicker is in the seventh step where, I mean, really, that's where the magic happens. That's where true healing, true transformation occurs. I'm getting there. It's been a long, hard road. I have a history of trauma since I was this high. It still greatly affects me on levels that aren't necessarily apparent unless I really open up and let you see inside. I can dissociate to an extreme degree. Extreme. And it can make life very confusing. And it's really, really important for me to take time to be still. It's really, really important for me to take time and to purposefully communicate with people all these different aspects of my being so that I know I'm okay. I loved what you shared, Megan. Thank you so much. I loved what you shared about, you know, again, with John, people are going to come, you know, after he died, you'll be okay. I am okay. I'm grieving. Fuck. You know, and again, I had to realize they were well-meaning, you know. But if my grief makes you uncomfortable, that's not on me. I'm not going to pretend everything is wonderful to make you comfortable today. I can't do that. I know from doing years and years and years of work around trauma, not just with myself, but with other women, both from both sides, the sooner and the more directly we deal with the trauma, the more fully we're going to heal and the less future impact that trauma will have on our life, negative impact. And one of the things that I've learned and the seventh step proves over and over is that, and this is so hard to say sometimes, our traumatic experiences can bring equally and deeply profound gifts. And it's so bittersweet to say, my husband's death was horrible. I sat and listened to someone talk about going through the death of their dog. And at a certain point, they took the dog to be euthanized. My husband wasn't afforded that luxury. So we live in a society that will be merciful to a dog or a horse, but won't be merciful to my beloved husband. And I spent 3 days and three nights that close. That close. There were 10 days, but the last three, I was this close, and the only reason I didn't was because one of the last things he said to me before he lost the ability to speak was that he felt like, and we use the word God for lack of better word, but we both knew what we meant because we knew what we believed. He said, I feel like God's waiting for me to make a decision. And I watched him struggle. I've been through traumatic shit. No one should go through since I was this high. I'm telling you what, watching the man I loved go through that, that's gone. It's gone. I struggled with that my entire recovery. It's gone. It's gone. And I'm dealing with this because I don't want that to affect me for the next 50 years. I'm going to be 54, but my mom's 93. My grandmother was 102. My dad died at 94. I might be in here for the long haul. Theoretically, I can die with like 77 years clean. I'm going to try it. But I don't want it to haunt me, you know. But those last 3 days did for a long time. And I knew what through this program, I have tools, I have gifts, I have hope, I have promise, I have experience. And I'm still a hellraiser at heart when it can count. I'm not going to raise hell just for the sake of raising hell anymore. I don't need to fucking prove anything to anybody anymore. You know what I mean? One of the greatest gifts that came out of the whole last 10 years of my life is that I really don't need everybody's approval anymore. I used to try to please everybody. You know what? My mom is important to me. My children are important to me. Key women are important to me. I have key, very important relationships. How you feel about me is really important to me. But how I feel about me is equally important today. And I realized that I was making what this person over here, who I either just met or I knew and I didn't even really like, and, you know, 10 years from now, they might not even be in my life, but I was making what they might have thought, like what I thought they thought, more important. Like, that's crazy. It's so easy for me to look at you and see how beautiful and wonderful and gifted you are, the gifts, the blessing you are to the world, and it's so hard for me to look in the mirror and see the same thing. But that's becoming easier. And it's not an ego thing, it's a humility thing. Actually, first time I was on the seventh step, when I looked up the word humility, it said an awareness, an acceptance of our assets as well as our liabilities. And I learned in that step that, you know, like most of us coming in, I could have made you a list a mile long of all my negative qualities, and this paper would have been blank if you asked me to say anything good about myself. And that's me as an addict. And now I think I can be pretty realistic, and I have some wonderful, amazing, insightful people in my life who help me maintain some semblance of, I think, a healthy perspective on what my balance really is. What I miss in my life are people who challenge me. And I want to invite any of you, please, begging, on my knees, I will. I swear to God, please. I miss being challenged in recovery. And I don't know if it's because I have 30 fucking years. I don't know if it's because I'm a fucking widow. I don't know what it is. But it's like I need, you know, and maybe it's my area. I don't know. Like someone else just poured his heart out in a meeting and he called me after. It's like, you know what, Weez? Guess how many people came up to me after the meeting and I didn't even have to guess. And that's a regular. That's been since I've been there. I need that. I miss that. You know? And it's a two-way street. That's respect. That's what our book talks about when it says being each other's eyes and ears. You know? It's not that I care about you. It's not that I want you to care about me. It says in our text we care about recovery enough. Because our message gets diluted a lot. I can be just as guilty as the next person. In fact, even up here, I can be really guilty with that. One-on-one is one thing, but up at the podium, am I giving a clear any message? Because trust me, I'm into a lot of other shit. Like the way I interpret and was taught to interpret the 11th step is go out there and seek. Blaze that trail. Go discover what works for you. And follow your path. Follow those paths. It encourages me to go into, you know, and some of this other stuff that I'm into. One of my pet peeves in Narcotics Anonymous is when people come in and they get a little bit of time and maybe they give a little big lot of time and they think that NA has some kind of lock on spiritual principles. Like, wake the fuck up. We're infantile compared to some other stuff out. Like, infantile. We don't even begin. We just barely begin to touch here. You know? Get out there. Explore. You know? Find what works for you. And again, it's like we talk about in our traditions. True spiritual principles do not conflict with each other. They complement each other. So, for my 25th anniversary, John had Mr. Bill make me the... That first convention I went to in Ocean City, I had never been out of Pittsburgh. I'd never been to an out-of-town convention because I had two babies, right? I divorced their dad. It just happened that was his weekend. It's like, I'm going, right? We rented those couple buses. It was a trip. But $15, I did not... I was like all I had in my pocket. And I bought this beautiful NA necklace that said NA, the words NA in the center. And man, I wore that necklace every day. That necklace carried me through 17-ish years of growth, challenge and growth, awareness. It says in our literature, I love this line, any clean addict is a miracle, and the keeping the miracle alive is an ongoing process of surrender, awareness, and growth. And that necklace, I would touch it, like my medallions, I would just touch it and feel the connection. And John always used to ask me, what do you want? I want to give you something. What do you want? And I had everything. What more can I want? My life is overwhelming. I have a platter. I don't need more. Please, you know, whatever, more comes, more is more goes, more comes. I mean, it's like, but I don't really want anything. And then one day he kept asking me, and I'm like, you know, the only thing I really would want is the necklace with just the symbol. And he had Mr. Bill, this is the only one in the world. He had Mr. Bill make this for me. And but after he died, I even got this Well, I have a feather and a turquoise and a horse. I love horse energy. And I got this heart that has some of his ashes on it. But it just didn't feel right. Nothing felt right after John died. You know, and again, it wasn't so much. I married this man knowing he had cancer and I was most likely going to bury him. I went into it knowing this. It was the way he had to die that was unacceptable to me. Oh, and that's what I was going there and I forgot and I got sidetracked. So I'm glad. It was unacceptable. I couldn't handle it. And I like one of the other things besides shells is I like to roam antique shops. And there's a little, it's a huge antique shop down by where I live, and I found this necklace. And it says, chosen, created, celebrated, and cherished. And I wear it. And usually I don't even wear my NA necklace unless I'm at an NA function anymore. And I like to remember, I like to not remember mentally. I like to remember with every cell in my being, I'm chosen, created, celebrated, and cherished. You are chosen, celebrated, cherished, created. I want to approach you this way. When a very, very important woman said to me, after John died, that I would see him again soon as a small being. And for some reason, where am I going? Let me back up. One of the things this program afforded me after John died, because of who I am, how I live, how I choose to present myself in the world today, the hospice of my county, which helped care for John in our home, they invited me, they requested. I speak to their administration immediately after he died because they didn't like it any more than I did, but their hands were tied. And I did, and I said, you don't want me to speak to them right now. I said, I am raw. I am extremely angry. I was a mess. And they said, no, this is exactly what we want. This is what we need. This is what they need to see. And I spoke to them about what my husband, and it took me a year and a half, what my husband and I went through. And 6 days later, within 6 days, they had changed their policy and they had administered palliative sedation to two other people. Johns Hopkins Palliative Care asked me if I would be interviewed for an article for their alumni magazine on the difference palliative care makes. And I did that. Johns Hopkins has 12 palliative beds now. So there was some good that came out of it. But it didn't change the fact, you know, that John had to suffer like he did. And I went through this whole struggle with it being wrong. It was wrong. It was wrong. And what I'm trying to do is allow that struggle to transform into a place where I don't judge it. It just was. It just was what it was. And just allow myself to be who I am. And experience the loss fully as I can. And I have to do it in doses and I have to stop and let my spirit catch up often. And whatever it looks like. And I want to thank you all for your time. I look forward to our next speaker. I haven't heard you share in a long time. But what I want to do, and normally, see, again, I try to do things different than I normally do sometimes. Like my instinct leads me. And I've spread John's ashes many places. And we loved this retreat. We spawned another retreat where we live directly from this retreat, shamelessly. And I want to leave some of his ashes right here. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Louise, for sharing. I would like to introduce the second speaker, Laurie W., from the Rise and Shine Group of NA in Northern Northeast area of NA.
I'm Laurie, I'm an addict. I need this. Whew. This isn't a good one to tape. More tears than anything. I'm a full bucket inside. Did I say I'm Laurie, I'm an addict? It was good to see Louise. I thank you for sharing and giving of yourself, spirit time, experience. I saw Louise. Vaughn said, you're going to speak with Louise. I said, oh, that's awesome. I haven't seen her in a long time, and I love her energy and her spirit. Ooh, it's so much work when you're in a place. Getting through. Getting to where. Getting to the prepared place. Because I believe that the God of my understanding is already at the end of my, at the end of time. I just got to get there. So, when I seen her, my heart was happy. And had a word with her up on the hill. But this ain't about Louise necessarily. As it is, you know, what we do for each other in this program and the miracle that occurs when we gain the ability to care about anybody other than ourselves. It's profound. But I was sharing with her up there, and I believe... I kept trying to figure out what I'm not trying to figure it out because I don't try to figure out what I'm going to say anymore. I just show up and give what God gives to me. And I was reflecting on, because I spoke at the Tri-State Regional Convention not convention, I apologize, spiritual retreat. And I just was, not necessarily not happy with myself, but I was just all over the place, you know. And I was processing that, and just, I was, what I said is where I was at. And it's got to be okay, and that's that. But since that time, you know, I'm in a season of going through a whole lot of things I've never been through. And I was sharing with some elders in my community, you know, the longer you live clean, the more you get to experience life raw. So 2 weeks ago, a couple weeks ago, I had a turbulent time. My nephew got shot. My aunt, this is all within a week. My aunt that helped raise my husband died. And my sponsor died. And she called me. We had talked about 2 weeks prior. And let me back up. About 2 months ago, Delphine, which is interesting, listen how recovery is so woven together. I got a shirt on that says, Diversity is Our Strength, Ocean City, Maryland, April 2009. That's where I met my sponsor. I have gone through a lot of loss and turbulence in the area of sponsorship. And went to a jazz breakfast on the ocean. I went by myself. I went with a group of women in Ocean City, but I went by myself to the jazz brunch. And I was sitting there. A lady came up to me. She says, where are you from? You enjoying yourself? I said, yeah, I'm enjoying myself. I'm from Pittsburgh. I said, get the hell out of here. I said, yeah. She says, I said, well, actually, I'm from a little town about 20 miles outside of there. You wouldn't know it. I said, New Kensington. And she says, get the F out of here. She goes, I grew up there. I said, what? Yeah. She said, I grew up there and then moved to Homewood and then moved to Washington, D.C., in the 70s. And she said, I'm Delphine Glaze. And nice to meet you. My brother is best friends with one of my predecessor who's in my home group, Billy. And so I'm like, wow, her spirit was amazing. Amazing. Soon as I met her, I instantly knew I wanted her to be my sponsor, just our spiritual connection. So I went home on a Sunday afternoon, Sunday night. I said, I'm calling her. I'm asking her to be my sponsor because I had gone through a lot of grief over the loss of a sponsor I had for 12 years. I just celebrated 23 years in May. And I had this particular sponsor, and one day she just stopped answering the phone. And I said, you know, I'm going to send the police over there to see if you're okay if you don't want to answer the phone pretty soon. Well, she never did. I just seen her after 5 years. I seen her at a meeting. She's trying to get a week together. She can't get a week at a time. So anyway, but I was so glad to see her, and I'd call her through those years. I'd call and leave her messages. I love you. I'm thinking about you. Call me if you, whatever. So when I seen her, oh, it just melted me. And I'm so glad she's back. I hope she makes it. But at any rate, I had struggled from that time up till I met Delphine to find the connection that I desperately needed, woman to woman, woman to woman. And so anyway, that night I asked her to be my sponsor. And when I came home from that Ocean City convention, she said, yeah, I wanted to know more about her. I already knew about her, though. I already knew about her. And so, and she confirmed. She confirmed it. And so then we had a journey back and forth from Washington, D.C. She came every year for the convention. A couple years she was doing her interferon treatments, and she couldn't even move. All she could do is make it down the road, come have somebody drive her from D.C., come into our cabin, sit down on the couch, and that's all. She couldn't even get up to the lodge for a meeting. She was wiped out. So, about 2 months ago, I talked to her. She goes, my back hurts. And she says, I'm going to the hospital. I said, all right. So she went and called. I said, hey, what's going on? You know, what's going on? She says, well, they're going to run some tests and everything, but they think it might be cancer. I said, okay. So then I called her after that. Anytime I ever called the woman, she never didn't answer. I mean, call me back. Or respond ever. So I called her about 5 times. Oh, this is familiar. This is, you know, this not calling me back. And I wasn't a high maintenance sponsee. We had an understanding. However, didn't hear from her. Then I talked to her. She finally answered the phone about a month ago. And so she says, no. She died 2 weeks ago. Yeah, about a month ago. So I'm talking to her. I said, what's going on? She says, they found a mass on my liver. And it's inoperable, all that. She says, hospice is here now, she said, because I fell at the hospital out the bed. She says, but as soon as they get out of here, I'm going to John Hopkins. And they called me. I didn't hear from her. They called me Friday night, August 9th. Said Delphine died. And so it was quick. It was quick. But she didn't think she was going to die. She thought she was going to go to John Hopkins. But when I talked to her a couple, you know, the month ago, time stands still sometimes, but I prayed. We prayed. We had the same higher power and a lot of the same beliefs. But we prayed, and I did not pray for healing for her. I didn't pray for healing. Sometimes I do. Sometimes if I'm prompted, I'll pray for healing for people, but I didn't. Words wouldn't come. So God was preparing me at that time to let her go. So she knew everything about me. I went through one of the most painful times in my recovery with this woman. She never talked bad about nobody. She always kept it where it needed to be for me. And you know what that's like to have a person that knows everything about you. Everything. No secrets, and feel peace to be with that person. Know that they love you, they really love you. There wasn't nobody else in the world. Nobody else. And when I heard she died, I didn't cry or nothing. I have peace. You know, I'm going through a little bit of a struggle now because I chose not to go to her funeral. And I believed that I'm a loyal person. But I had suffered so much loss in a short period of time. I couldn't endure it. I couldn't do it emotionally. And I talked to one of the ladies that's in my way, and she said, it sounds like you said your goodbye when you prayed together. And it's like you choose between going to a family member's funeral and your sponsor. She transcended family. She was beyond that. But I couldn't go. I couldn't go. I didn't want to see her. I didn't want to see it. I couldn't do it. I wasn't capable. So this has been my time to cry. Here. I knew it. I knew. I already knew it. I knew this would be my place. Like sacred ground. And I don't care. I don't care about who's... I love that you're here, but I don't care. Do you understand what I'm saying? That you see me snotting and crying, that don't bother me. Because I've finally been able to let my guard down to feel it. Because I wouldn't let myself. I'm not a punk. So this is good. This is good. Because I am in... See, and that's the thing about... Because I... Before I came... Enemy tried to get me. And I was going to start out with... Cleaning my plate off... And telling you... What a jerk I was being up to this point. Yeah, up there talking about people. Talking about a particular member up at the campsite and all that's wrong with him. Yeah, exercising my negative part of being a woman. And I knew when it was coming out I shouldn't be doing it. I knew it. It tastes good for a moment, but then you got to pay the price. Tasted good for a minute. I know I shouldn't say this. Okay, you got your reward. Now you got your conviction. Because I even said, I owe an amends. Soon as I did, I owe an amends. Regardless, this is nothing but the enemy trying to disrupt my flow to come down here. And I fell for it. You know, I fell for it. Probably because I didn't want this that's going on now. There's always a war, you know, with me being who I used to be, who I can pull that stuff out off the shelf so fast and be the most wretched person. I don't do it often. I don't do it often. I like what Louise said. She'll raise hell when it's worth it. And that's, you know, where I'm trying to go. You know, that's where I'm trying to go, where my life has, where what I do has purpose. That my movements are purposeful. And, I mean, I have so much evidence around me about how fleeting life can be. And so having the consciousness of mind to know in the moment that I'm wasting time, you know, I'm wasting time. But I do love the fact that I can come here. Oh, let me tell you some good news, too. Okay. August 9th, my sponsor died. I almost forgot this. August 11th was my birthday. 51 years old. And I hope this tape bleeps that out. But anyway. I'm kidding. Anyway, on August 11th, I said I'm going to give myself the best birthday gift I can. I'm going to get me a sponsor. Yeah. But let me... Ooh. Wait. I'm going to tell you something. This is so beautifully designed. Everything's so beautifully designed. My sponsor, when somebody passes, when I say my sponsor, I mean both of them, but mainly the one I just lost. When somebody passes, all their text messages, all their phone messages, all their emails, become extremely valuable. And my sponsor was one that would send me messages all the time. But she was always saying something more than the message said. Okay? And she knew I'd get it. And I did. That's the connection we had. It was what was being said, what wasn't being said, and then what needed to be said all in one thing. And so I was reading, I was searching her emails, because for a minute I was in total denial about her dying. I looked in the Washington Post, I didn't see anything. I said, I got to make sure this is real. Now the people didn't call me, she's gone, but I got to make sure it's real. No obituary. And which was another challenge of actually getting there. And then I said, I'm going to go through one of her emails and find out everybody she emailed. You know those mass emails people send out? I sent out this big email. I'm emailing, this is Laurie J.W. from Pittsburgh. I say Pittsburgh because it's convenient. From Pittsburgh, Delphine Sponsee, wanting to find out what's going on? Question. Please call me out. So all these calls start coming from D.C. Yeah, Dale died. She's gone. But I need a confirmation of that. So in that email from the beginning of our correspondence, she sent me her story in an email all about her. And her story was that she had gone from D.C., came back to Pittsburgh to St. Francis, and got clean. St. Francis is no longer there. And that the secretary's name was Delphine Wright. Delphine W. And she, at that time, they'd make phone calls. The secretary called, said, this is Delphine calling for Delphine to tell you she's at the meeting. So she always thought, she got a big chuckle out of that. And in my garage, when I'm doing stuff in my garage, I listen to tapes. I got Delphine W and Delphine G on one tape. They spoke together, like me and Louise. And my sponsor admired Delphine. She liked her. So I said, okay, August 11th, I had two people that I was going to ask. One was an AA, Mary, beautiful lady, and one was going to be Delphine W. Delphine W ain't no joke. Talk about challenging you. Yeah. Somebody to challenge you in your recovery. I was very apprehensive because I would have got her from the beginning. If I wasn't, I'm not intimidated, but she has a standard. Let me say that. She has a standard. So anyway, I got past my fears. I called her on my birthday. Said, if you have me, I need a sponsor. She was first distraught over hearing Delphine had passed. And she said, it would be my honor to sponsor you. It would be my honor to sponsor you. And I thought to myself, Delphine would be good. Delphine, my... And some people think that's weird. Delphine. But I know my sponsor is cracking up. She's cracking up. And she would have approved of my decision. She would have approved of my decision. That gives me peace. That's what I do. Doing what I do here, that's what I do in honor of her memory. She was a recovery warrior. She worked for Mr. Bill. She worked for Mr. Bill all over the country. Beautiful woman. Anywhere she went, she just carried a warrior spirit. She was a recovery warrior. She never married, never had children. She was married to this process. And she just didn't do this. She did other things too. But she was amazing. Amazing. And we talked. That last time we talked, I said, Dale, I said, if we didn't live another day, God's been good to us. She goes, I know that's right. She says, he's been more than... I have received enough for eternity from him. And that was it. I would rather leave it there. You know, and not war with shoulda, woulda, coulda. Because we only got what we got. But I find it very interesting. I find it, and Louise, I want to thank her for laying out the foundation for toiling the soil and preparing for me to be able to talk about my grief. She made the ground ready for me to come and do that. It's no accident we both talked about our grief. It's no accident. And so what I'm saying is, it makes me look at gratitude. Gratitude. And being fair to the people that are still here. You know, I have a son that's incarcerated. That breaks my heart. It breaks my heart that I have a child that has to live in a cage. I don't like it. I don't put my cat in a cage. I don't like it at all. Plus, I have that, and it grieves me daily. You know, but that's the plan that God has for his life. And I'm not going to deny him the process or become overly concerned with him being comfortable in that situation. Because I want him to hate it. I want him to hate it. I do the best I can. That's all I can do. But I have a whole lot of things going on. Whole lot of things going on. But there's nothing in front of me that is more powerful than the power that I have behind me. My higher power got my back. And you're part of it. You guys are part of it. I don't want to spend time engaging in that type of behavior that I exhibited up at the campsite. That's not who I want to be. That was a total waste of my time. Talking about a predator. Because he sure as hell ain't going to prey on me. I ain't the one. Lord help me. I'm so flawed, you know. But it's okay. It's okay because I'm still in my mending process. I'm getting myself restored here, you know. And I do, I found that I just am so grateful to my predecessors, you know. And everybody here got their own brand of grief to deal with. I know people here who have lost brothers, children, husbands, sponsors. I've lost other people. I'm just trying to deal with the one right now because it's the freshest. And that's what I do. I deal with what's right in front of me at the time. I do the best I can with that. And I know there's others here. But we heal together. We heal together. And that's the beauty of it. The fact that I had an atmosphere where I could share that because I... That's a weak area that I have. Never, I don't want you, I'm strong. I am a strong woman. Don't be deceived. However, I'm not that strong. I shouldn't be bearing things by myself. There's some things I should allow others to help me with. And I'm not good at that. I'm not good at that. It's easier for me to just keep it moving. Yeah. But I have suffered losses. And I remember at my grandmother's funeral, I never shed a tear. Never shed a tear. So the tears that I shed here are valuable. They're precious. Because that's my cleansing. And I can't heal what I can't feel. I need to be able to continue the healing process until I get my full healing. My full healing, which my sponsor got. She got her full healing. That's my belief. That's my belief. God didn't have a healing for her here. She's whole. Woo! Ain't no pain. Ain't none of that. No, she's just telling me, oh, she shared with me some of her pain. But she's, what do I got? I cry for myself. I cry for me. And the I have to still endure without her. She's free. And so that gives me peace. Yeah. I think that's all I got. I don't have no concept of time up here. I love it. I don't have no watch. I don't got my cell phone out. I love it. No radio, no TV. I love it. Took a nap. Oh, boy. Which I mean, I go like a workhorse. Talk about a horse, the energy of the horse. Woo! I can relate. Yeah. I always say I can rest in heaven. But that's not always the best way to go about life. But anyway, I love you ladies. I the tenderness. You know, if I could say anything else, and I shouldn't, I don't know if I should or shouldn't, but let's not, I'm not going to spend no time fighting with nobody. I'm going to say that. I ain't going to spend no time with fighting with people. I'm still trying to learn how to deal with my mother. Is this meeting over? I got to take a couple minutes here. I apologize. How could I forget that relationship? My mother, she is the true thermometer of my temperature. My mother is such a blessing in my life by how she continues to challenge me for proper communication. I was a brat, spoiled. And I held my mom responsible for just about everything that was wrong in my life. I called her bad names. And still can be very impatient with my mother, who does the best she can in her clueless reality. And it's okay. My mother's a very loving person. Her heart's beautiful. But she just don't know how to communicate. She's verbally abusive, things like that. But I am learning through this recovery process. Every time me and my mother communicate, I get to practice a spiritual principle. Every time. Every time. She likes to pick and fight. I used to give her what she wanted. Today I said, yes, Mom. Yes, Mom. It's my duty to honor my mother. Regardless of what she is, what she does. I have a responsibility in my faith to honor my mother. And so there are ways that I can communicate to her that I can, that I maintain my integrity, but I don't offend her. See? I honor her, but I don't deny myself who I am. My mother allows me to practice that on a regular basis. Yeah. And so, I mean, I hope my mother gets to Louise's mother's age, 93. But based on some of her practices, I don't know. Only God knows. But I needed to mention my mother because, I mean, in a women's rap, I would be remiss to leave out that relationship. She called me up here. She screams. She's a screamer. Soon as you answer the phone, instantly disrupts my peace. But what I'm learning, she keeps giving me practice. When I hear that, I talk softer. Or I will inject the peace into that conversation. So in actuality, I'm able to make an amends to my mother, who I stole years from, by making her take care of my children without her permission while I ran in my addiction. And my mother told me, I hated you. I hated you because you stole my life. So now, and I have a nerve to get an attitude when you're not doing what I want you to do the way I want you to do it when I want you to do it. To the woman who I stole part of her life, knowing how valuable life is, especially now where I'm at. The value's gone up. Death has a way of making you look at that. The value's gone up. So anyway, I will continue to try to be a good daughter. I am a damn good wife. I'm getting better as a mother, and I'm an awesome grandmother. Grandbabies. Those are some of the roles that I play, and I have some phenomenal women that I sponsor who help me. When I sent out that email about Dell, because they knew how I felt about her, when I sent that out, there was on the phone, texting. But they also knew the tough side of me, too. You know, I can put my tough armor on. You're not going to penetrate it. So anyway, I feel so much better. I feel so much better. And Louise, I just can't thank her enough. I just can't thank her enough for her sharing. Do you know how precious that was, what she shared with us? That was a ceremony. That was precious. And I appreciate it. That was precious. And intimate. And sacred. What we witnessed here, her embrace to that woman right there, Maggie, that was precious. We got to witness that. Be a part of it. The energy of it. That's what it's about. That's what we do for each other. Louise gave her husband high honor among us. We got to witness it. Be a part of it. That's powerful. That's one of the most powerful things I ever witnessed in Narcotics Anonymous. And have eyes to see it. It's beautiful. Beautiful. I'm done.